Hello, I'm Keith Perron, and welcome to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. We begin today's program with one of the biggest stories this week.
You're watching BBC News, broadcasting to our viewers on public television in the US and around the globe. I'm Daniela Ritorto. Our main story. A series of gun and bomb attacks in Paris has killed at least 120 people. In the worst incident at a rock concert, police say around 80 people died. The Stade de France was evacuated after two suicide bombings while President Hollande watched France play Germany. And the president has declared a state of emergency and closed the country's borders. Police say eight attackers have been killed.
That's right, the terrorist attacks that took place in Paris just over a week ago. Now, the aspect of this that I want to look at is, as this was going on, if you're on social media, you may have noticed that people would have changed their picture to have the French flag incorporated, the red, the white, and the blue. This started to raise a lot of questions, especially for people from Beirut, where just a few days earlier, there was a bomb attack that killed a number of people. So people are saying, well, why did the same thing happen with Beirut? A lot of people from the Middle East and also Kenya, where they suffered a very large attack over a year ago at a shopping mall where 147 people were killed, were also criticizing international news outlets for their lack of coverage. But in reality, was there a lack of coverage? No, there wasn't. Because international news organizations like the BBC and others actually did pay attention to the story.
Yes, within the past hours we've heard that two suicide bombers blew themselves up in a busy area in the southern suburb of Beirut, which is a stronghold of the movement of Hezbollah. What we've heard is that there are at least 17 dead and dozens of people were injured. It happened about 20 or 30 meters apart, the two explosions, and it was in a busy shopping area that at that time was busy with people getting around their shopping.
So those casualty numbers, I suppose, may rise. Yeah.
Indeed. And it's important to note here that Hezbollah is involved in the war in Syria. It has thousands of fighters fighting alongside the Syrian army and now the Russian military force providing air support. And since the Russians started their involvement in the end of September, the involvement of Hezbollah has increased and they've been sending more fighters and sustaining more casualties.
So this could be more tragic blowback, as it were, from the war over Syria.
Yes, we haven't had any claim of responsibility yet, but we're monitoring that.
And with our world lead, ISIS terrorists taking responsibility for even more deadly violence. It was a somber day of mourning in Beirut, Lebanon today, as families defiantly filled the streets to say goodbye to their loved ones. Suicide bombings yesterday. At least 43 people were killed. More than 200 were wounded. CNN senior international correspondent Clarissa Ward is in Beirut. She visited the blast.
A popular marketplace became a scene of carnage late on Thursday. Civilians were the ones killed and injured, and the ones who were targeted. This is a mainly Shia neighborhood in Beirut's southern suburbs. It is also where supporters of the Shia armed movement Hezbollah live. Suicide bombers who arrived on motorcycles detonated their explosives minutes and meters apart. The second blast...
ISIL has claimed responsibility for the deadly double bomb attack in Beirut. At least 41 people have been killed and more than 200 injured in the blasts. The attacks took place in a southern suburb of the city, a stronghold of the Shiite Hezbollah movement.
That was just a short sampling of the international news coverage of the Beirut blast that happened just before the Paris blasts. Now, why were people criticizing international media outlets for their coverage? Because they were reporting on the story. But many people would say, well, I didn't see it in any of my Facebook feeds. All I saw was Paris, Paris, Paris. And that's because, well, that was the story that was shared the most. Many news organizations will, of course, have Facebook pages. For example, CNN International, Al Jazeera, BBC World Service, Deutsche Welle, and others. On their Facebook pages, they will post the stories that they just did. Now, people can either go to those stories and comment and like, and others can also share those stories to be shared on their own Facebook pages to be viewed by people who are their friends. And then friends will pass it along, and so on and so on. Well, this is sort of, in a very simple way of explaining, what happened. Essentially, when the Paris attacks took place, it was a big story, breaking news story, for many international broadcasters the world over. Within 7 minutes, just the BBC Facebook page alone had over 20,000 shares in the first 7 minutes from their own page. Now, this story was shared on, say, 20,000 pages. Then the friends of these 20,000 people would share the story on their page, and so on, and so on, and so on. It's not that the Beirut blasts were not covered. They were. But nobody was clicking on the stories. There could, of course, be various reasons for this. One of the reasons that is given quite frequently is people will think, well, Beirut, Middle East, this kind of thing happens all the time, so it's really nothing new. Paris, on the other hand, well, that's a different story, especially the coordination of how these attacks took place. One of Channel 4's chief correspondents, Lindsay Hilsum, put it this way. Sitting on Eurostar en route back from Paris, I, like many other journalists, are getting increasingly upset with those shouting at me that Channel 4 and every other news outlet was wrong to present out of Paris because we didn't cover last Thursday's attack in Lebanon in equal depth. Some of us have spent our whole journalistic careers in places like Lebanon, Syria, Rwanda, Iraq, you name it, trying to get stories about atrocities committed against non-white people up in the news agenda. On Channel 4, we don't do badly, but viewers watch, read, click on stories about celebrities and things closer to home. Leading on Syria turns them off in droves. We see it in the viewing figures, but we keep going nevertheless. We try to find new ways to tell a story, such as a recent interactive online package that asks viewers to make the choices refugees have to make. Several of our friends, Maria Colvine, Remy Aldeck, James Foley, and many others, lost their lives doing this work. They would have been in Paris too, reporting this awful mass crime in the European capital, in which many non-white people were killed. But they're not, because they died reporting in very dangerous circumstances stories that many of those shouting racism at us didn't bother to read. And that was a small note that Lindsay Hilsum, the chief correspondent for Channel 4, wrote. You see, this is the problem. People will criticize international news outlets for not covering a story, but not realizing, well, the story was actually covered, just nobody read it, and nobody clicked on it. To give you an example, CNN International, when I spoke to their Hong Kong bureau, told me the page for the Beirut stories, which was published just after it happened, had so few views compared to the Paris story. In fact, the Paris story in 7 minutes had more views than the entire story about Beirut in a 24-hour period. So yes, the story was getting a lot of coverage, but if people are not clicking on it, it gets lost with everything else. I'd like to find out your views about how the foreign media covered the Paris story. We're going to be looking, of course, at this subject again on an upcoming edition of the program. We'll give out the email address at the end of the show. You're listening to Media Network Plus, coming to you from PCJ Radio International.
The Spectrum Monitor is a monthly electronic magazine covering shortwave, amateur radio, scanning, satellites, Wi-Fi, and vintage radio, which is available for any device capable of opening a PDF file.
Hello, rewinder 5, which is PD2229. B220R105.
The Spectrum Monitor also covers amateur radio satellites, maritime and military monitoring on shortwave, reviews of receivers, scanners, and software used for shortwave, and more. Annual subscriptions for 12 issues is only $24, with individual monthly issues available for $3 each. If you're already a subscriber, you can renew your subscription by clicking on the Sign Up for 2015 button. MasterCard, Visa, Discover, and PayPal are accepted. For more details, visit our website at www.thespectrummonitor.com.
A couple of weeks ago on the program, I told you about a series of special broadcasts that we would have targeted towards Europe between 9 and 10 hours UTC. The frequency that I announced then was 17825. That's 17825. We did try to get our new frequency out to as many people as possible, but there was very little time. It was a very short period of time that we could actually do it. But anyway, the new frequency is as followed: 11580 kilohertz. 11580 kilohertz. The original frequency that we were going to use was from Trincomalee in Sri Lanka, but at the last moment we had to change to Okeechobee in Florida. Now, I was very surprised with the reception quality that we were getting in Europe. One of our listeners, Jan Osterveen, sent this clip along.
That's nice.
Whose ever idea it was to use a harpsichord in pop music? Oh, wait a second, that was Mitch Miller. I wonder what he was drinking, or something else at the time. Bachimia bachiyu, Rosemary...
That is actually pretty good reception from Okeechobee, Florida, recorded in the Netherlands by our good friend Jan Osterveen. Now, if we had been using Trincomalee, we actually would have had pretty decent coverage in Southeast Asia, Europe, as well as the Pacific. Now, it is coming from a different direction, and there were a number of listeners that tried to tune in from New Zealand all the way to Japan. But listeners in Japan had a different program that they were listening to. Well, that in fact was Radio Free Asia on top of the frequency that we were using, but there was no actual interference because they're targeting a completely different part of the world. Listeners in New Zealand, for example, Brian Clark, he sent along a clip where he can faintly hear our signal in the background. Now, one of the advantages, of course, of using Okeechobee as a relay, it reaches Europe very well, but also we've been getting a number of reports from listeners in Canada and the United States. So again, the broadcast time is from 9 to 10 hours UTC. The new frequency is 11580 kilohertz. Programs that we have until December 26th are the following. This weekend, November the 21st, Call It Ukraine. November 28th, Rockin' with Raoul. December 5th, Classics with David Monson. December 12th, a special Jazz for the Asking. December 19th, a one-hour documentary looking at broadcasting in Europe during the Second World War. And finally, December the 26th, the day after Christmas, a special listeners program. Yes, we're going to be responding to all those who wrote in for these special programs. We also have a special EQSL for each of them. So tune in to get a chance to get one. And by the way, and I'll make the announcement here because you're not going to hear it anywhere else, but on December the 26th, there's going to be a special prize. But that's all I'm going to say right now. You can find all the details at our website, www.pcjmedia.com.
Hi, my name's Colin Newell, and I'm the editor and creator of DXR.ca. Since the mid-90s, DXR.ca has been the go-to website for timely resources for the DXR, SWL, and broadcast listener. If you're looking for unbiased reviews of the most modern receivers and antennas, or are interested in participating in some of the more lively online forums all about radio, then come on by. DXR.ca, a world band radio website.
Well, last week, if you tuned into the program, you know we talked about Australia's shortwave history for domestic purposes and also for overseas broadcasting through Radio Australia. Well, today we're going to continue to talk a little bit about the ABC, but more specifically, ABCRN. That's ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, RN standing for Radio National. A three-year project is underway to map the history of ABCRN. The chief investigator, Dr. Virginia Marsden, talks next to Richard Ady about the scope of the project and why the network is uniquely suited for the digital age.
Station 2FC Sydney. Studio time is 8:45. Mr. Len Maurice, the popular baritone, will sing I Fell in Love with Your Voice.
I fell in love with your voice.
That is very, very, very early Radio National. Sort of. Certainly, 2FC became RN in Sydney later on.
The idea of a more serious network being separated off from, say, like we have today, the Metropolitan Networks 702 and so on, that doesn't really develop until a little bit later. And certainly after the Second World War, we get the first separation between two national networks, the National Serious Network and the Lighter Network.
They can't be called the National Serious Network and the Lighter Network.
They used to call it the Serious and the Light. That's in the kind of memos and discourse around the ABC.
What did the listeners call it?
The listeners would think of it more as the national network and the interstate network.
Oh.
They would think of separate stations. So 2FC might have been the one you listened to in Sydney, although sometimes they swap around, and 2BL was actually the Sirius network. That sounds a bit dull and boring, being the Sirius network, I suppose. And it wasn't entirely serious at all. There was lots of comedy. And, of course, as you know, programs like The Goons were always on.
So when do we get a kind of thing that we'd identify as RN?
Well, I think you could say that from the post-war period, you get a cultural network that has 50-50 music and talk.
As much as that in terms of music?
Yes. Classical music was a key part of the early Radio National, then called Radio 2, the second network.
And half of it was music. What
else? So there were dance bands. There was some folk music as we head more into the 60s. Even contemporary youth music was experimented with just before Double J came on.
Right. So what were its influences? Because I think what it's easy to think is that, you know, it's kind of copied what became Radio 4 in the UK. But it's more complicated than that, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the ABC was very strongly influenced by the Reithian BBC. And you can see very similar departments and kinds of programming happening here. So they had a program area called Talks, where prominent thinkers, scientists, artists, writers, all sorts of people would do a talk. It would be a bit like a lecture or something like that.
There was still an editor of Talks when I joined Radio National, which is in 1998.
Yeah. And it was part of this idea that the public service broadcaster could educate and inform the citizenry and people who didn't, largely for many of them, didn't have access to education beyond the age of 15. So education was really important in the early days.
Were there other similarities if you're comparing to other public broadcasters? Are there any apart from the BBC?
Well, after the Second World War, you certainly have the public service broadcasters in Europe modelling themselves on the BBC after particularly those governments that had sided with the Nazis. So there was this whole idea of re-educating the citizenry and becoming democratic organisations. Many of those programmes like Radio France or RAI in Italy, they were modelled on the BBC, but they're also a little bit different. They were more state broadcasters, so they could be regarded as sometimes being the voice of the state.
Yes.
But they still were public service broadcasters and took on some of those ideals.
So in the more modern times of RN, sometimes it's been a bit of a political football, the idea of the cultural elites, which has been a line run by politicians of some persuasion and some parts of the press. You've got this sort of approach of elitist, highbrow, not for the masses. It's a way of knocking it. How long has that been around?
Well, what's interesting is it's not just conservative side of politics that's been attacking Radio National for those sorts of things. It's also been the left side of politics and the academy. Most of the material that I could find on Radio National from 20 years back was critical of the ABC for being elitist and highbrow and too white and too this and too that. Mm. Appreciation of the ABC has only started to happen much more recently. The attention to Radio National from the conservative side of politics in particular seems to me out of all proportion. Well, certainly to the number of listeners that Radio National has in
cities. It's never had a huge number of listeners.
Not in each city, no. But I think that attention is there because politicians from whatever side know that there is power in Radio National. Figures from all walks of life, leaders in all sorts of fields who are on Radio National, in some way I would hypothesise who have an impact, but we just haven't traced it yet. That impact might be on the way science is done. Robin Williams' science show and earlier versions of that created a culture of public science that we'd never had before. It was all behind closed doors. And no doubt we will discover some of the impacts there.
How close, over its history, has it come to death?
At this stage, I can't be sure of that. But in the early 2000s, the digital era was here, but the media hadn't fully realised what that meant. So there were digital practices coming in, but ideas of podcasting, streaming on demand, even using the internet as a space to make the work visible. There was no thought of that really yet. So at that point, I think you got this dominant idea that the radio should be these formats and it should get as many people as possible, whether it's the ABC or not. Radio National had smaller audiences. It cost more than any other network. Certainly, you know, in the early 2000s, I think the figures show that it was very expensive because it employs a lot of staff and specialist staff and it takes a longer time to make programs.
Many fewer now, of course.
And certainly these were the attacks on Radio 4 and Radio 3 in the UK. Here, there was a kind of lack of faith in this product. It was seen as dowdy and old-fashioned. Then that Radio National manages to survive that, and then we get demand from the audience, we get the BBC doing its podcasting service, the on-demand idea, and suddenly there is rejuvenation.
What is your time frame and what are you hoping to finish up with?
We would like to write a book exploring this network. We're very open-minded, though, to look at where it might not be delivering, where it may not have delivered innovation for whatever reason. What is this form that is unique in Australia but not unique in the world?
Dr. Virginia Marzin speaking there with Richard Ady, the chief investigator to put a project together on the history of ABCRN. You are listening to Media Network Plus coming to you from the studios of PCJ Radio International in Taipei, Taiwan. Well, we now turn our attention to propagation, what has been happening, and what we can expect over the next few days. Here's our propagation editor, Glenn Hauser.
Keith, the global HF propagation forecast through November 21st, from IPS in Australia, normal to fair. From Space Weather South Africa, as of November 21st, magnetic conditions quiet to unsettled, shortwave fadeouts unlikely, MUF unstable. From Met Office UK on November 21st and 22nd, generally unsettled conditions expected in the wake of a coronal mass ejection and high-speed stream, while storm conditions should cease. From OK1 MGW in Prague, the geomagnetic field will be mostly quiet on November 20th, 21st, 26th to 29th. Quiet on November 22nd and 23rd. Quiet to unsettled November 24th and 25th, December 3rd, 4th, 8th, and 9th. Active to disturb November 30th, December 1st, and 6th. Quiet to active on December 2nd, 5th, and 7th. From SWPC in Boulder, geomagnetic field activity expected to be at unsettled to active levels, with G1 minor storm periods likely on November 30th, December 1st, 6th, 7th, and 8th, with ANK indices peaking at 25 and 5. Lowest readings of 5 and 2 or 8 and 3, November 20th to 29th. Solar flux troughing at 95 on November 20th to 22nd, climbing to 120 November 30th and December 1st. William Hepburn's VHF, UHF microwave DX maps, show extreme tropospheric ducting off Baja California and between Mozambique and Madagascar on November 21st to 23rd, and all week off northwestern Australia.
All right, and with that propagation report from Glenn Hauser, we've come to the end of this edition of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. As you can hear me ripping up today's script, if you want to contact us, our email address is mnp@pcjmedia.com. That's mnp@pcjmedia.com. And if you are listening to this program on shortwave, do let us know the time, the frequency, and the time, and we will send you a Media Network Plus EQSL. Just use the same address, mnp@pcjmedia.com. On behalf of the whole team, I'm Keith Parent, wishing you well. We'll see you again in 7 days' time. 73 and 88 to the ladies.
Yeah.